time to find balance and be refreshed here on Every Heart, Every Woman.
Every Heart, Every Woman.
Get ready for uplifting music and inspiring interviews.
Every Heart, Every Woman.
Let's get motivated to move forward as we share our life experiences. Host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. Before we jump into our interview, and it's going to be a great one, let's set the tone with a little bit of live music. This is In the Garden. This is performed by a group that I'm a member of called For Change. Sit back and enjoy. Well, welcome back, everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. I hope you enjoyed In the Garden that was performed by For Change. Our radio show is a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Go to their website to get all of the great information about Love Ministries. You can head to loveministriesbuilds.com. Now, we are going to jump into our interview, and I am so excited to welcome Dr. Jennifer Wimbish. Welcome, Dr. Wimbish.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we are, I'm going to tell you, everyone, get ready, because this is going to be a great conversation. Dr. Wimbish has written a book called Leadership Wisdom for All Generations, Unique Insights from Authentic Leaders. And Dr. Wimbish, she grew up in Port Lavaca, Texas.
Yes.
And she has, beautifully laid all of the things that she learned and the things that she grew up with in this book. And then she takes us all the way from Port Lavaca to Corpus Christi, where she became an educator.
Yes.
And then from Corpus Christi, you went to, I forget the name of the college you went to.
Vernon Regional Junior College.
Vernon Region Junior College. And then to Dallas Community College.
Dallas Community College.
And so I met Dr. Wimbish through my big brother, through Arlington Jones, mm-hmm. at Cedar Valley Junior College. And they have a great relationship. And he let me know that you wrote this book. And he said, you must have Dr. Wimbish on your show. So I'm so excited that you are here, Dr. Wimbish.
Thank you.
And so, Like I said before, your book, and we've already gotten into a great conversation, so we're just continuing it now on the radio show. But your book really, I thought, was written like a memoir. Mm-hmm. Like, you put all kinds of pearls of wisdom from your years of growing up in the book, and then it gets into all of this great leadership advice and examples and just stories that you tell about the things that you learned, about things that you did great, about things that you learned from things that didn't go so well in your life. So, Dr. Wimbish, let us know. First, my first question, I always ask everyone this first question, the backstory. How did you get to, okay, I'm going to sit down and write this book and write it in this fashion?
Well, first, God led me to write the book. Mm-hmm. And when he spoke to me, I said, oh, no, I'm not an author. Mm-hmm. But I listened to be clear. Mm-hmm. And so when he said to me, write the book, I sat down and I wrote an outline. Okay. And I knew what I wanted to write about, mm-hmm. even though I wasn't thinking about it. I've always felt that every generation should write down or record the things that they learned from great leaders, mm-hmm. and leave that for the next generation. Mm-hmm. So then I wrote down, and I knew I wanted to do it in chronological order, mm-hmm. because I think for my life, it truly all works together for good.
Yes.
And so I started with what I remembered about Port Lavaca. I went through each phase of my life. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to end with things that I would say.
Yes.
So that I add the conversation of great leaders.
Yes.
And the people that mentored me, I've always had great leaders, male, females, Anglo, mm-hmm. African-American, mm-hmm. People of different persuasions, mm-hmm. Professions. Mm-hmm. Even one gentleman could not read or write.
Oh, goodness.
But was masterful at mm-hmm. fundraising.
Hmm.
And so it's a group of people that were great in what they did also for their communities.
Yes, yes. And so one of the things that I love about your book is in the beginning, like I said, it reads like a memoir, and mm-hmm. what you say is the community you grew up in Port Lavaca, your church community, your school community, and at first it was one way, and then as you got older, you got into being able to go to school with different people of different backgrounds.
Ethnicities. Yeah.
And so in all of those areas, it was the community that really laid the foundation for you to become a great, strong leader.
Most definitely. You know, they say it takes a village to raise a child. So it started at home. I grew up in the church.
Mm-hmm.
My mom and dad were disciplinarians.
Mm-hmm. This comes out in the book,
and
y'all.
So they taught certain things.
Yes.
And I grew up in a time where then the church taught certain things,
mm-hmm.
but the two worked together.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and dad didn't mind me being punished.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to a segregated school.
Mm-hmm.
So all of my teachers were African American.
Mm-hmm.
So they taught us our history. They taught us that we were to be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the time, I tell the story in the book where one of our teachers said, if you were a doctor and had to deliver 100 babies,
yes.
if you dropped 10, that's not good.
Right.
So your assignment, whatever you're doing, 100% of the time to do your best.
Mm-hmm.
And then when integration came, we went to an integrated school,
mm-hmm.
and I had Anglo friends, and I had this perception
mm-hmm.
that it wouldn't be fair,
mm-hmm.
but it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very confident
mm-hmm.
that I would do well in that setting
mm-hmm.
because our teacher said when we left, remember you represent a group of people, a race of people, you represent us.
Yes.
And so if you don't do well, they will say, boy, those teachers didn't teach them well. So, and let me just say this, is our teachers got paid based on how we did on the Iowa test.
Hmm.
18 of us, we all passed it.
Mm-hmm.
We all passed mm-hmm. it because of great teaching.
Yes.
But we had this confidence. We knew our history.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us were talking recently. We weren't ashamed to speak up
mm-hmm.
and speak out. The
mm-hmm.
church taught us how, in the old days, you had to memorize the poem.
Yes.
So we had seen excellence at home,
mm-hmm.
at church, in the school, and so when integration came, it was just easy.
Yes.
So it was a great community that invested in me, in all of the kids in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make the statement that I was poor, I guess, but I didn't realize it
because
we were so rich with people who loved us
mm-hmm.
and showed us, exposed us to great things.
Yes, yes. So you really had the most important, the things that you really needed to make you a success. You found that in the community.
In the community.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think it's, you know, very noteworthy that you say about your time when you were in integrated schools
mm-hmm.
that part of your life was still significant and it was still a part of your life that helped you to know who you were and become
Yes.
You know, be confident yes. in yourself.
Yes, it was because, you know, you hear of things happening. And so I thought, oh, these teachers are not going to be fair.
Yes.
But they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get close to some of those teachers.
Yes.
I didn't act like, oh, when I was in the African-American community, I knew people, but
mm-hmm.
here I'm not. But here's another thing. The African-American teachers and the community stayed engaged.
Yes.
So when we went to the integrated setting, each teacher took a day of the week and provided tutoring in their backyard or in their homes. So
wow.
if I was doing a writing assignment and I had a question,
mm-hmm.
say on Wednesday, I knew I could go to Miss Eddie's house.
Yes.
So that was important. And we had a group called the Sunlight Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
And listen at how brilliant this was. This
mm-hmm.
teacher put us together, and every summer we went to Cozumel Cavern or somewhere to see in Texas or outside of Texas. And we got a little charm bracelet.
Okay.
And if you didn't get in a fight,
mm-hmm.
if you didn't cause trouble in the classroom, you got mm-hmm. a gold star.
Hmm.
If you were able to make at least a C or above, you got a gold star. So we were all working for that gold star.
Yes,
and when we graduated from high school, everybody got a set of luggage, $600 in terms of a scholarship, and some of us got a pearl necklace. I still have my necklace. Those kinds of incentives, I believe, would work today. We were working hard, but also $600 for somebody to give you a scholarship back in what I graduated in 70. That's significant.
Yes,
that will pay for some things. So it was that the school, the teachers that we came to who were Anglo were fair. They cared about us. They wanted us to learn at the highest level, still that standard of excellence. But the African-American community also invested in us. And that was everybody.
Yes.
All of us. And so it truly was a community.
Yes. So what I'm hearing is we should all seek someone in our communities that we should be serving.
Yes. We should always be looking to help and to serve and to treat people the way we want to be treated.
Yes.
Wherever we are, we should treat people the way that we want to be treated. When I was president of Cedar Valley College, here's what I would say to the students, and the student got this, that if somebody from Harvard is sitting on your right side and someone from Howard, you should look the part. You should speak the English language as well, and you should be able to think as well. So that meant that I needed to provide them buildings like the best. And so that same standard of excellence was important, and the students got it. One quick story, we had a group of ambassadors, and we were going to put them out in the community in polo shirts. And one student said, "Dr. Wimbish, the people at Harvard don't have on polo shirts. They have on blazers.
Right.
You need to get us some blazers." So that meant that I needed to ask other people to help me. We're talking about serving and giving the students what the best has.
Yes.
And that in and of itself makes a person confident.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Stand up straight.
Yeah. That's the standard. Right.
Yeah. I love that. When I was an elementary music teacher, I was a teacher in DISD for a couple of years. My principal, when I got there, she said, "What I really wanted is a choir." And so I put together a group of kids and we started the choir. She got us choir robes. The same thing. She said, every other school that's doing this at the, you know, top level, they have choir robes. So we got choir robes. And I told the children, I told my children, we are a professional elementary choir. And they said, "Well, what does that mean?" And I said, "We are going to sing all types of music. We're not going to only sing gospel. We're going to learn everything, and we're going to be able to do it extremely well." And so when we went to competitions, you know, the they were just amazed. They were like, "The children, their tone, their ex." And I said, "We're a professional elementary choir. We don't know anything else. We want to be the best."
Yes. And, you know, if you teach children and young people that at an early age, they grow up with that. And then you also teach them to look for the great people.
Yes.
And model those individuals. So you're also wanting to spend quality time with great people. So that means that you want a coach or a mentor as you move through this journey we call life. And so the other piece of that is exposure. So you have to take them beyond Texas, take them to see the world. And with technology, we can do it many different ways. But you also say to them, look for the great people who are doing great things, and you do what they're doing.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I like that. So let's go into your college years, because like I said, this is a memoir. So there are so many things that you learned in your college years. And you went to?
I went to Hampton University.
Historically,
a black institution, but a great institution. And there was a lot, same attitude of teachers. But this whole notion of the competition is the world.
Yes.
I learned that. One of our science teachers, Miss Cheatham, said to us, we all on the first test made C's and D's. And mm-hmm. she said, did you think that I would give you only the material in the book? Hmm. That you have to be great thinkers. Hmm. And so remember, Oxford, Harvard, Yale, that's the competition. Mm-hmm. When you leave here, you're not competing against people from Hampton. Mm-hmm. So it was that same standard. We learned to study in groups. Mm-hmm. We learned to help one another, and we saw great people. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine at, let's say, 19, seeing Duke Ellington? Seeing Gwendolyn Brooks, mm-hmm. Julian Bond, they all came to our community. Besides the fact that Curtis Mayfield, you know, we had a yes. little bit of all of it.
Yes.
Was there at that time, cooling the game.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we went to church, we heard a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
We heard, yes. As you mentioned, music.
Mm-hmm.
We heard all kinds of music, but it was done very well.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had a service project. We were close to the Veterans Hospital.
Okay.
And so on Sundays, we went over to read to the men there that didn't have families. Mm-hmm. So this whole notion of a community, mm-hmm. helping others, being excellent, learning at the very highest level.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were also taught that we were to solve problems.
Okay.
I will never forget at graduation, the speaker said that everybody should find one complex problem and work mm-hmm. to solve it. And he ended with saying, those in jail can't do it.
Hmm.
Those on drugs can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Those that don't have the capacity to learn like you can't do it, you must
mm-hmm.
do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember to this day him saying, find a problem,
mm-hmm.
find a problem,
mm-hmm.
and get serious about working with others to solve it.
That is good. So that takes my mind in so many different directions. But first things first, I would love you to talk about working in groups, because our young people today have difficult, my children included. I have two teenage children. You know, they get so upset and, okay, I'm just going to do it myself. And then I'll just send my group the work that I did. Talk about working in groups.
Well, first, I believe wholeheartedly that we should work in groups
mm-hmm.
And that we'll get more done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in various settings, and even with our children, though, we have to be clear about the rules.
Okay.
And so people like to put groups together without saying, here's our purpose, here's
mm-hmm.
our charter, here's what we will do, here's what we won't do,
mm-hmm.
and here are my expectations,
mm-hmm.
especially if you are the leader. At Cedar Valley, it was my expectation that people would research and study the work of others before they did anything.
Okay.
So that needed to be an expectation.
Yes.
I expected them to communicate with me and with the campus.
Mm-hmm.
So often people aren't clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And once you set that standard, then you have rules for how we're going to operate as people.
Okay.
We're going to listen to one another.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to respect one another. We're not going to say bad things about one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so then those kinds of things, then the leader has to model and you move it from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's really good. But sometimes, maybe even often, when we say we're going to work in groups, those things aren't defined clearly.
Right. And that's a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody does have to be in charge.
Yes.
And somebody has to call the question or call when someone's not doing those things. And sometimes you have to have some backroom conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
say to people, you know, that's not really the way we want to do this. Because conflict is going to happen.
Right.
Conflict
right.
is going
right.
to happen.
Right.
But how are you going to resolve conflict?
Right, right.
That
right.
becomes very clear. And, you know, right. the Bible tells us how to resolve conflict.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If I have a problem with you, I need to go talk
go
to you.
Go talk to you. Yes,
and
yes.
then if we don't solve it, then 2 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same principle in a group,
mm-hmm.
but the leader has to model the behavior. And somebody has to say, now, let's think about another way to say that. Surely you didn't mean that
right,
way.
Right, 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 right.
So those are, and that's the way you have to set it up with your kids also.
Mm-hmm,
Mm-hmm. It's the same principles.
That's good. That's good. Okay, so it's time for us to take a break. When we get back, I want to ask one additional question about working in groups that I think that people are really wondering. And then we'll go into the leadership because we've got so much to cover. We'll be back in just a minute with Dr. Wimbush.
Every Heart, Every Woman, the show where women find balance, peace, and inspiration. Now let's get back to the show with your host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome back to the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host. We are having a wonderful conversation with Dr. Jennifer Wimbush. She is the author of Leadership Wisdom for All Generations, Unique Insights from Authentic Leaders. And Dr. Wimbush, I thank you so much, first of all, for your time and just for how open you are with us and giving us all of these pearls of wisdom. This is what I'm calling them.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Pearls of wisdom will work.
Yeah. So before we jump back into, and I wanted to ask an additional question from where we left off, but before we jump into that, where can we get your book from?
Sure. It's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, hardbook, soft copy, and an online version.
Okay. All right. So we can get it everywhere.
Well, and let me also mention, if you live in Dallas, they have it in the bookstore at Concord Baptist Church.
Okay.
And at Brookhaven Community College.
Okay. All right. All right. So you can just swing by there and pick up a copy.
Yes.
And you will not be disappointed, let me tell you. This book is, and because we're not even, like, we've talked so much, but we're not. You have to get this book. You have to get the book. You have to read it. There's so much that you can learn from. And Dr. Wimbush, and I will say this, that you've broken down this book into three different parts. And there's one part that it says, okay, this is for parents.
Yes.
This is for leaders.
This is for leaders.
And then this is for, I can't remember the third part.
For teenagers. For young people.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. All of the parts are fantastic. So I highly recommend this book. I really hope all of our listeners will reach out and get a book from you. I want to talk about resolving conflict.
Yes.
Because you have a unique way of saying, okay, these are going to be our rules and this is how we're going to resolve conflict. And it isn't, you don't stray away from facing things head on.
Yes. Yes. I think it's important for us all to deal with problems and learn how to say things in a way that you're respectful of people. But we have to be about problem solving. Now, let me be the first to say that you know I don't always do it right. But I've learned that there's a way to talk to people to resolve problems, and you still have to set the rules. We're going to respect one another. We're not going to yell and scream at one another. And let me just say this. I think a piece of conflict is, I taught my son, and I think this is so important, at about 12, a problem-solving method. Okay. So I say that to parents. Parents, teach your children. There are many methods for making a decision and solving a problem. And once leaders and people go through those phases, it also helps you with conflict because conflict is going to occur.
Right.
And so then you have to have a system of how are we going to talk about this? When are we going to say, as one of the leaders I learned even recently taught me, I respectfully disagree with you on that.
Okay.
That's a key sentence. So knowing how to do those things. And then I'm never ashamed to say I made a mistake. I apologize. I made a mistake. At Cedar Valley, sometimes faculty would say, oh, please don't go and say that. But you have to people have to see the human side of you.
Yes.
Then that means that they are comfortable in a situation to say, I didn't mean to do that way. And then when it goes wrong, it will not always work well. Mm-hmm. There will be fires mm-hmm. and blasts. Mm-hmm. Then somebody has to go to that person and say, you know, let's talk about how we could have done that better. Mm-hmm. When I got married, a lady told me, remember, it is the stronger person that can always say, I apologize. Mm-hmm. And it is the stronger person that can go to someone and say, let's talk this through. Now, and the goal is not to talk just to talk, but to say, now, let's think about what could have been different. Mm-hmm. How could we have done this differently? Mm-hmm. So that becomes key to conflict resolution.
Yes. So I like that concept because sometimes we think it's weaker.
Yes.
To say, I am wrong, especially in front of other people, and to go back to the person and, you know, apologize. We think that's being weak as a leader.
Right. It's really being a leader of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is very important for people to know that you're honest and you're truthful. And just mm-hmm. like I said, mm-hmm. I didn't always do it right. And then if you are secure and comfortable,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes easier to say, you know, I made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say sometimes, help me think about how we could do that differently to a group. Let's play this back.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things become important. And those are things with your children to model. And you
yes.
know sometimes they have fights and that
right,
kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But it's the same thing. Let's sit down and talk about, as a family, this is just not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to do things in this way. Let's talk about what we could do differently. Now, you also have to punish them, too, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. The Bible says that, what is it, if we don't, what is it, spare the rod?
Spoil the child.
Spoil the child.
Mm-hmm.
So you do
mm-hmm.
have to have, with children, mm-hmm. a discipline, but they have to see you comfortable sharing with them and saying, you know, we could have done that better.
Right, right. That's good. Okay. You've helped us all right there.
I hope so.
So let's talk about the leadership skills that, so how many years did that span, the years that you were, that you've transitioned from, to, and you had children, you got married.
I got married, I had children.
Yes.
I had one son. Let me say that to some extent, I grew up as somewhat of a leader.
Okay.
Because in Port Lavaca, small town, 22,000, mm-hmm. At that time, nothing happened if we didn't plan it. So after a revival,
mm-hmm.
If we wanted to have a game night, we had to plan it.
Right.
So I did that. But I stayed in education about 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an example of a very traditional person.
Mm-hmm.
Taught for 10 years, mm-hmm. junior high, high school, was a counselor. Went to the community college, was a faculty counselor,
mm-hmm.
Then I was an administrator, a dean
mm-hmm.
for 10 years. Then I was a vice president
mm-hmm.
for 7 years. Then I became the provost in a campus where I ran that campus almost, to some extent, the president worked with the board
mm-hmm.
for 3 years. Then I stayed at Cedar Valley 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are many models of success, but when you are the leader, especially of an organization, we were always taught, while you're always growing and learning,
mm-hmm.
when you are the leader, you're not learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you do well. You know your weaknesses, and you're building a team
mm-hmm.
that fills in your gaps, because daily you're going to be asked to do any number of things. Say
right.
a welcome.
Right.
Look at this budget. What's your vision? What do you value? How are you going to put together a strategic plan?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you haven't spent enough time doing those things and knowing who you are
mm-hmm.
and whose you are, then I think you're prone to make more mistakes.
Hmm.
And so I have at each area spent significant time not only learning, but learning from great people. You
mm-hmm.
hear me say that?
Yes.
So great people always. And one lady said to me, Jennifer, you are so teachable because
hmm.
you're always seeking mentors. I tell people, if somebody is great, if you say to them, I want to be just like you, will you mentor me? Most people are going to say, yes, you want to be like me. So I look for people and I say, will you critique me? How could I do this better? Mm. What do you see? Mm-hmm. And that's a different position to be in.
Mm-hmm. How will you critique me? That's, now nobody says that.
That's important to say. Will you critique me? Will you tell me? When I first went to Brookhaven, I had a friend who was an English person. Mm-hmm. I gave the speech I was going to give to mm-hmm. the college, mm-hmm. and she would say, "Now, Jennifer, that's etiquette. Pronounce that word this way."
Okay.
And when I came to Cedar Valley, the speech faculty, when mm-hmm. I first went before the board, they critiqued me. They were a little surprised that I could speak because I could speak well. I think they were a little surprised, but it didn't intimidate me. Mm-hmm. And they talked about the reflection in your voice. Mm-hmm. Reflect a little more here. You're passionate about that. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for great people, and you say to them, help me. I want to be like you. Hmm. Show me some things I could do differently. And people would do that. One of the great leadership lessons is this whole notion of how you critique someone from a positive point
yes.
of view.
Yes.
A great woman who's now deceased once, we did something, and I guess I was coming on a little harshly, and she said, "Now, Jennifer, remember, whenever you're critiquing people or groups, always start with what they do well." Mm-hmm. Oh, guys, I'm so pleased that we did this well, and
yes.
then go to the things for improvement. So those kinds of things are about communication, mm-hmm. and they make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And so that all goes into being a good servant leader.
Servant leader.
Not a yes. taskmaster
right.
leader.
Right. Not the boss. Not the one where you say to people, do as I say do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeking to engage people in the discussion
yes.
So that there is buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of their dream.
Yes.
And so then they, too, are wanting to work to make that dream become a reality. So it is a style of leadership where you're bringing people in, but the ultimate goal is to be a servant leader.
Mm-hmm.
You're leading for some reason. And I believe that people make the world go round. So
mm-hmm.
it really is about people.
Yes.
And so we're each looking and working to help someone. I read something that said every day we should say, who can I help today? Just think about how powerful
okay.
that is. Every
mm-hmm.
day, who can I help today?
Mm-hmm.
Lead me to somebody that I can help.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, Dr. Wimbush, how do you create trust in your team, in the group?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. And let me just say I've had teams that trusted me and I've had teams that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, one, you have to be an authentic leader, which
okay.
is this whole notion that I write about in
yes.
the book, that
yes.
these people are human, they're authentic, they're real, and they model what they say. One great leader taught me to start wherever you're working with your value system. That's fairly
okay.
hard for people. Here's what I value.
Mm-hmm.
And then say to them, hold me accountable for mm-hmm. these values.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes a key piece of it. And I think this whole notion of saying to people, I made a mistake, I apologize, bringing people together and challenging them to do something greater
mm-hmm.
Than what they want to do, and then setting the vision
mm-hmm.
for where you're going and you living true to that vision. If a standard is excellent, then you have to be working on excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're not excellent, you'll say, boy, I made a mistake here.
Right.
So I think that builds trust. Also, good communication. You have to have, in the world we're living in now, they say you should communicate mm-hmm. everything 3 times.
Okay.
So email, online, in person,
mm-hmm.
In the paper,
mm-hmm.
In the newsletter. You have to have good communication systems and that same honesty. We had as a strategic goal to
mm-hmm.
do X. We didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
We were close. Now, what can we do together
mm-hmm.
To get to this goal the next time?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I like that. And communication, so you say communicate things 3 times.
3 times minimally.
Yes. So, and that's in all areas. I can think of when you're dealing with your children.
Yes.
Communicate effectively and plainly three times. You're at work.
Right.
Three times.
And, you know, the other piece about communication is also with your supervisor. Once I gave a group this article, How to Manage Your Supervisor. Mm-hmm. So it's your job to know the value system of your supervisor, what they like, what they don't like, how they like to communicate.
Okay.
And your job is to work with them in ways that are consistent with the way they like to work. You know, I used to say to people, I'd much rather you leave me a voicemail message if you have something that's important than for you to send it to me in an email that screams.
Mm-hmm.
So then if those people working with me want to work in that way. Now, that's not to say that I don't have to know the same thing about you.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly had people that reporting to me and people today, I can tell you they prefer a text over an email over a voicemail. I know what you prefer just in the way we communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have to be looking at that and then knowing when to have a private conversation. This is also very important. When can I say something critical in a group setting?
Mm-hmm.
Do I know the people well enough to do that? And is it constructive?
Mm-hmm.
And when do I need to say it in a private conversation?
Mm-hmm.
So there's communication with supervisors, communication with colleagues, communication when things don't go well.
Right.
And then communications in a large organization where you want everybody to be on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
You want everybody to be able to cite the vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cedar Valley College, we will be a premier institution transforming lives.
Right. Right.
So I can't say that one time. I have to, when I'm making a presentation, talk about it. It has to be on the website. It has to be in emails.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is the leader not always to do the communication, but to have someone that leads that and then holds the leader accountable to say, now, when you do this, don't forget to mention these three things that we're working on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I also love that you put in the book that we should all realize that we don't have to do every single thing.
Yes.
There's value in handing things off to someone else, especially when that's their passion and, you know, it's the thing that they win at.
And they do it well.
Yes, yes.
Yes. It's so important to learn to delegate.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing becomes true in terms of the standards. And so if I'm driving excellence, if I hand something off and we're going to communicate.
Okay.
I say when you're working in teams, the goal is 95% of the time for the leader to accept what the team brings back.
Okay.
So that means that whoever's leading that team, we have to be talking so that if they're way in left field, I'll say, wait a minute, let's think a little bit more about that. And then if it's a written report, people have to know, for example, that it should be correct grammatically.
Mm-hmm.
That, hey, you probably need to have someone read it before it gets to me. And then you're working to establish that whole structure where you're delegating when people are ready. And two people who have the skills to do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say sometimes that's hard because I'm a very detailed person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a standard of excellence. So, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I could just do that quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is to get that team where you have to, as the leader, delegate or you'll have no thinking time. You won't be able to function well. So, yes, it's important to delegate, but with, here again, some standards and things for people to know that they're aiming to do.
So I'm hearing that communication really is
important.
It really is key. It really
important.
Is key. So when you're in, because I know that you speak to leaders.
Yes.
All the time. What is one of your main points that you always seek to get across to leaders?
Well, for one, we have to model the way and be about helping people.
Mm-hmm.
But here is my passion.
Okay.
Here's what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's also important for leaders to be strategic thinkers and to use data or data, whichever mm-hmm. way you say it, as a way to look at what you're doing so you define where you're going to improve.
Okay.
So you can see this real clearly mm-hmm. in organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Do we answer the phone well? Mm-hmm. Let's look at phone systems will tell you that. Mm-hmm. And so I love this whole thinking about strategically, where are we going? What's our vision? What's our purpose? What are we trying to do? How do we use information for decision making? It's the same thing in a family. You know your kids. You have to know your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know their gifts, what they do well, what they are working to improve. And then you're constantly saying, how can we improve this? Let me say one thing that my mother believed. My mother believed as a child, my job was to learn what I did well so that okay. when I went to college, I had some sense of what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she would just tell people, anything you want Jennifer to do, ask her to do it. So much so that when I became 19, one of her friends said, I think she's old enough to decide. But I think that's important for parents to also be looking and saying now, during this period, let's look at how we're going to improve.
Mm-hmm.
Do you read well? Is your strength math?
Mm-hmm.
Is it storytelling? Could you write a book?
Mm-hmm.
Is it gymnastics? And so then it's looking at how they're going to improve and where they're going to improve.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another important piece of what you're doing as the leader, the coach, mm-hmm. looking at and observing.
Looking at what everyone does well.
Yes, yes.
And that really, doing that, and because you get to this at the end of the book about knowing who you are.
Who you are.
Having a plan for yourself. Journaling,
yes.
Being able to go back to
yes.
that and seeing what is my progress.
Am I working
yes,
on this
what
year?
Am I working on? What didn't I meet?
Right.
So do we need to put? So all of those things go into, and I think, I would say, I don't know if I'm correct, but I would say the young people today struggle with that the most.
I think getting clear about your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Is a hard question. And it is, excuse me, something that you struggle with.
Yes.
Is knowing what you were put on the earth to do. And
yes.
so it takes some prayer. It takes some searching. It takes some looking at. And then saying, what do I want to look like in the future?
Mm-hmm.
And what am I working on to improve? Like for me, in my spiritual walk, it is on worry.
Mm-hmm.
And the fruit of the Spirit is peace.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And I've made progress, but that was something I wanted to improve.
Mm-hmm.
So always looking at purpose. I would say a lot of people can't answer that question. What's
right.
my purpose? What was right. I put on earth to do?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Let me say the other thing that's so important is for us to be balanced. We
okay.
have to look at our lives and have time to rest.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the Creator rested on Sunday to do some of the things we like to do,
mm-hmm.
to have family time,
mm-hmm.
to have date nights,
yes.
And to look at how not to overwork and to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have some time to define and think about what's my purpose.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's very important.
That okay, y'all, we have a lot of work to do. And Dr. Wimbush, I thank you so much for coming
thank you.
Be here with us.
Thank
now,
you.
Now, let us know one more time. You say we can get the book
on Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com. If you're in Dallas, Concord Baptist Church and Brookhaven College.
Wonderful. So everyone, reach out and get this book, Leadership Wisdom for All Generation, Unique Insights from Authentic Leaders. Our radio show is a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can go to loveministriesbuilds.org for all of the great information about Love Ministries. Follow us on our social media at EHEW Radio. We're going to have all of the information about the book on our social media. So everyone, we want you to have a wonderful week. We will see you back here next week.